Hi, my name is Ben Armstrong.
Hi, this is David Koch.
My name is Thomas Maurer.
Hi, I'm Donna Sarkar.
Hi, my name is Lana Montgomery.
Hi, I'm Seth Warres.
Hi, I'm Aaron Thomas.
I'm Jess Dodson.
Hi, I'm Rocky Heckman.
Hi, I'm Sonia Cuff.
Hi, I'm Troy Hunt.
Hello, this is Wally Mead.
My name is Reid Purvis.
Hi, I'm Lars Klink.
Hi, my name is Alan Birchall.
Hi, I'm Adam Fowler.
Hi, I'm Scott Guthrie, and you're listening to the Need to Know podcast.
All the latest Microsoft Cloud news, as well as industry guest deep dive conversations. It's a Need to Know podcast. All thanks to the CIA Ops patron community. The Need to Know podcast. Catch us on Twitter and Facebook, N2K Podcast, and online at ciaops.podbean.com.
Welcome to the Need to Know podcast. My name is Robert Crane, and this is episode 252. And we're here to get more information and learn about the Microsoft Cloud. Now, the big event that's coming between September 22 and 24 is Microsoft Ignite, which will be another virtual conference put on by Microsoft. This one is typically focused at the IT Pro. There'll be lots of announcements and lots of focus on the technologies for people who have to administer, set up, and manage things like Office 365, Azure, and so on. That doesn't preclude a range of other technologies for developers and end users and so on, but it's really aimed at the IT Pro crowd. Now, typically this event had been held in Florida. It was one of the biggest tech events in the world, I believe. Around 30,000 attendees would move all the way through the events, the networking, the halls, all of that sort of stuff. And unfortunately, due to our current health situation, that has had to be replaced with a virtual event. So you can go and sign up at myignite.microsoft.com. That'll allow you to create your timetable and have a look at all the events and when they're scheduled, select the ones which appeal to you, and also sign up for things like the Learning Zone, the Connection Zone, and so on. Microsoft's attempt to try and make that as much the same as a face-to-face conference. Now, I think it will be very different from what most people have associated with previous Ignites. This is more going to be about Microsoft broadcasting announcements around its technologies, what it sees, what it's bringing in the short and longer term, rather than something that was focused more or less on the learning side of it. So certainly lots to learn, but it will be a different experience. Glad that Microsoft again has made the investment to go in and broadcast this 48 hours all through those 2 days. So you can join it at any time. You'll be able to see live sessions. You'll also be able to see pre-recorded sessions, and you'll be able to watch all the events after the fact as well. So that's going to make it nice and easy to make sure that you can catch up on all that information. And the really good thing about recorded events is you can run them at up to double speed and get through them twice as quick. So always like those recorded events. Now, we expect to see a whole range of announcements around Microsoft technologies come out around that period as well. So keep an eye out for those, and I'll make sure I share with you all the things that I think are the most important items coming out of this conference. But again, I would, if you're interested in this sort of thing and you want to keep up with what's happening in the Microsoft space and you want to see where Microsoft's going in the future with its technologies, I would suggest you go to myignite.microsoft.com and sign up so that you can be kept in the loop and be ready between September 22 and 24. Now, an interesting article I found here was on something called Project Mocha. So Project Mocha is sort of another way that you can begin to aggregate your information. This seems to be more from an Outlook, an email side of it, but basically what it is you create a canvas, and on that canvas you would put, you know, to do, you would put list items, you put important documents, you'd put calendars, contacts. The idea, again, it is a personal canvas in which you can drag and drop lots of Microsoft 365 information onto and start building that up as, again, perhaps like a bit of a whiteboard or a pinboard that you would have in your office. Now, if you scroll right down to the bottom of the article, you'll find out that to implement this, what you'll need to do is you'll basically need to run a line of PowerShell there, so don't forget that, and then it should start showing up in your tenant if you want to have a play with it. Now, obviously, the need to keep adding these sort of features to Microsoft 365 can add to confusion, so remember it is only in preview at this stage. I'd encourage you to go in and have a look at it. See what you think. Does it work? You know, evaluate it. It doesn't mean that it will necessarily come to production, but it's probably a good thing. I think makes life much easier, I think, for end users bringing aggregating information together in something they're sort of familiar with Outlook. But again, I could be wrong, but it certainly looks to me as though it is sort of on the list sort of track. The way, the look and the feel, the concept, the way it's presented to the user has very much got that lists UI on it, which is very, very consumer focused or end user focused, I believe. So I'll put the link in the show notes so you can go and have a look, but don't forget to scroll down the bottom and look out for the PowerShell link that you'll need to go and enable that on your tenant so you actually see Project Mocha start appearing. Now, another item that's been added to Microsoft Teams is the Microsoft List apps. So what you could do now is if you go into Microsoft Teams and you select the ability to add a tab, one of the options there that is now available to you is Microsoft Lists. So we can now put a tab in our team and we can point it to an existing list, or we can follow through the Lists UI and set up a new team and put that in a location for our users. Now, it can also be surfaced in conversations as well, just like many other things inside Teams. So again, go and have a look. You're going to have to add the app, obviously, to your team first so that is available. And then once it is available, you can then, like I said, add it as a tab. You can add it in a conversation. And it's an easier way to bring the concept of lists inside what is fast becoming a platform for entry into the Microsoft 365 space. So think of all your users, think of their ability, the amount of lists they're probably creating at the moment in Excel and all different places. This is going to make it easier and bring it all into one central location. The other side of this is that if you aren't in lists or you haven't looked at lists yet, my advice to you is make sure that you go out and get familiar with it. If you've done lists in SharePoint, there's no migration. Basically, it's just another way of surfacing, showing you the lists, but it does have a nice interface when creating lists, and also allows you to create personal lists, which is probably a handy thing for many people as well, keeping all that information inside the environment. Now, for those of you who don't know, I do a regular webinar once a month, and this month we'll be focusing on lists. So if you are interested in that, please make sure that you sign up for that, or I go into the list side of it in a deeper dive so that you get a better feel for what's going on. I'll make sure the link to this is in the show notes so you can go and have a look and look at how you actually integrate lists quickly and easily into Teams. Now, there have been a couple of updates to Word on the web and on mobile. A lot of this is around voice. So, for example, they've added the capabilities to do dictation. So you can speak and obviously Word will capture that information and present it to you in a document. Now, this is going to be really, really handy for the times when you need to obviously capture the information in meetings, maybe take a summary or notes or whatever. So it will allow you to do that. Seems to work quite well from what I've seen. But again, test it with your own environment. Make sure that it suits your needs. But I think it's going to be a very handy capability. And it gives you that conversion from speech to text. Now, the other thing that really caught my eye in all of this with Word on the web was the ability to also transcribe the audio. So what I can do now is take a recording of this podcast. I can upload it into Word on the web. So at the moment, it's only Word on the web. And it will transcribe it and put all the text for that inside Word so that I can then copy and paste that. So it can do that for videos directly in stream. But what I really like about it is the fact that you can go in and upload an audio file or a video file that will transcribe for you. You are then able to make any edits. You can identify the speaker. Still early days for this. It's not quite as good perhaps as some third party products that I have seen, but as integration as the ability to sit within the Microsoft 365 environment, I think it's pretty fantastic what it can do if you need that capability. So I am going to look at it for doing podcasts. So again, transcribing the podcast that you are listening to, I will then upload that into Word Online and try and see how the transcription and the dictation side of it works with Word. And again, I'll put a link in the show notes so you can go and have a play with it for yourself. But a handy little feature if you do need to capture the audio from meetings and so on. Now, there's also been more updates, as there always is with Microsoft Teams. So there are basically the more devices have been added, We've also got the ability to incorporate into additional Teams functionality. So basically what we've got is we've got the ability to integrate with some additional cameras. We've got some dedicated Teams devices. A lot of the personal ones that are floating around have also been integrated. So again, have a look at the link here so you can go in and see what is actually happening sort of on the hardware side of it. We can also look at things like, they're also looking at things like real-time presence, managing that. We've also got the ability for some new stuff for IT admins around the IP video policy and the Skype Online, Skype for Business Online connector. All right, so go in and have a look at that. And there's also some stuff in there for developers and education. So as always, there's lots and lots of information coming from Microsoft Teams. You should start seeing many of the new join experiences come into Teams so that you'll get more information. We're waiting on Teams rooms so we can start a meeting and then we can have the ability to go into what's called breakout rooms. Again, think of a conference and one major conference area and then breakout rooms for each individual session. Very interesting to see when that comes along, because that could be very handy when you're working in an organization. A lot of these features do need to be turned on. So if you're using Teams on the desktop, you'll need to go into your settings and look for the option in there that says, start using some of this new experience. So make sure you go in and check that. My experience has been with that is I seem to keep needing to check it on a regular basis, so it unchecks itself for some reason. So maybe that's when it gets an update to the Teams client, it unchecks itself. So just make sure that you do go in and check that, and you'll probably need to restart Teams. So if you want that new experience, the ability to view everybody in one place and have the new entry abilities, make sure that you do go turn those settings on in the Teams client on the desktop. Now, just an interesting blog post from me that I've done recently on incrementing a SharePoint list using Power Automate and Flow. So one of the big challenges I've had is the ability to have a SharePoint list with a column with a number. So basically, this item is one, this next item's two, three, four, five, six, seven. And I wanted the ability to go in and increment that number. So maybe if I used the first item on the list or it changed, I want to increment that number identity from one to two, and then have that cycle through all the items that are available to me. So I could basically have a rolling list where the ID constantly updates. Now, with some help from Andrew from Andrew Gallagher Computing in Melbourne, we've gone through and we've shown in this blog post here, which I'll post up, how to set that all up. You can find the minimum, the maximum, and then what I'm using it for is the ability to look at a list that I've created and take items from that list and then post those items into a Teams channel. And then the last thing is to go and update that item and increment the identifier so that it goes to the bottom of the list, and that means it won't be displayed again until all the other list items have been completed. So basically it's a rolling list of announcements. So a handy little way to do that in Power Automate. Couldn't really find a simple text post out there that showed people how to do it. So Andrew and I sat down and we nutted it all out, and I've detailed here in the blog post. Now the last update from me is the fact that watch out for my updated PowerShell course that I've released. So if you go to www.ciaopsacademy.com, look for the PowerShell course for Microsoft 365. This course is designed at getting you started with connecting up to the Microsoft 365 service like Exchange Online, SharePoint Online, and so on with PowerShell. Now, it's not going to be a deep dive into if-then loops and while-for and all that sort of stuff. Basically, the idea is give you the basics, show you how to set up a basic environment in Windows 10, run the commands manually, and give you access to any of the scripts that are out there that are good value, and make that a stepping stone to start going. Because what I find is a lot of people out there, especially IT pros, haven't used PowerShell, aren't familiar with it, want to know where to really start. Hopefully I've given you the basics and that will get you up and running quickly. And then I'll look to do more advanced courses down the track as there is demand. So go and have a look at that. Remember that the courses do support the work like this podcast that I do on a regular basis. Any questions, any comments, any feedback that you do have on this episode, by all means, please don't hesitate to contact me. You'll find the podcast at N2K Podcast on Twitter and Facebook. You can send an email to feedback@needtoknow.cloud or to me directly, director@ciaops.com. And of course, don't forget to follow my Twitter feed at directorcia for all the latest information around the Microsoft Cloud. So without further ado, let's get into our interview for this episode. So I'd like to welcome along to this episode, Megan Strand. Welcome along.
Hi, Robert. Thanks for having me.
And as always, what we would like to do is just get the guests to introduce themselves, let us know who you are, what you do, a bit of your background, and then how you've come to be in the wonderful world of Microsoft 365.
Sure. So my background originally is project management, but academically psychology. So those are both of my passions. And about 10 years ago, I went from project management into change management. And that was in the Office 365 space. So I have spent majority of that time in the Microsoft partner space, consulting with organizations on Office 365 change management. And that, you know, has been larger long-term projects versus shorter sort of launches. So that's my space, and I've been leading consultancy and building sort of practice around that. So essentially my sort of background of change management is heavily entwined with the Office 365 space as well.
Okay, so speaking about that, and probably what we want to focus on sort of is the change management part of it in relation to the Microsoft 365 space. So from your traditional background, what's an approach or a framework people can take when it comes to this sort of environment? And what are they going to expect when they go through a formal, a proper, a structured change management process in your mind?
So I think a lot of people who are very much in the Microsoft, sort of space, do tend to talk about ADCAR or the ProSci. And that seems to be, I think, essentially because Microsoft heavily push ProSci being the accreditation or experience or knowledge that people use when they're implementing their products. However, my background is very much more broad methodologies, and I don't think it has to be one or the other, because there's probably, across different methodologies, essentially what you're going to find in all of them is a structured approach with key stages and key activities to take, people on a journey from, being aware of what's going on to, heading them towards a desire, or people talk about hype, interest in what's happening, and basically going deeper and deeper into a learning journey from what's this thing, what is it for, and deeper then into how do I use the features for my day-to-day job and I know what to do with it. And then beyond that, longer term phases of embedding and reinforcement. So a lot of people like ADCAR because I think, the wording and the awareness desire, the reinforcement, that's got very, very clear approach. But it can also be whether it's lean change management or whether it's a model, I think, that fits in with a PRINCE2 project management approach. The key thing that you'll find is you need formal structure, key stages, preparation, and the right tools and knowledge for your staff to get them through the journey.
So who do you feel, or what is the recommended, who should be involved in this change process at the outset? So let's look at a company that's adopting or, looking to optimize their Microsoft 365 investment on their tools, and within that early phase, who should be involved in this initial change management scoping out? Is that just a high-level CEO, C-level, or is it mid-level, or is it the whole business in your experience?
It's a really good question, because as we're probably both aware, Office 365 tends to be an IT project, and it can be disappointing because sometimes, and I had a conversation this morning with an IT leader in our organization that said, can you help me, give me some tips, because no one outside IT thinks this is their thing. They don't think they need to be. They think it's just IT giving us another tool. It's really key that there's a range of middle management, I think is key. Having senior leadership buy-in is key, because, you need the budget, you need the approval, and you need them to eventually walk the talk and actually role model the behaviour once you've sort of gone down that journey. But essentially, you want access to areas of the business, because it's not just about turning on tools. We're not just getting Microsoft Teams. We need to actually drive value for the tool in key areas. What we end up talking about a lot with organisations is there's a foundation of building blocks of knowledge in Office 365, learning how to collaborate, communicate, make a Teams call or store a document, lots of different things. But then there's actually got to be a tailored experience for different areas of the business. So they then start to drive value that's in what they do. Do they want to use Planner and shared notebooks, or do they really need Yammer or Microsoft Forms or Bookings, you know, because they're frontline staff. So a range of stakeholders, middle management, L&D are key, learning and development, to help have a strong learning approach and build everyone be connected on that. And even HR, thinking about job roles and how they're impacted by the technology. So, yeah, a range of buy-in from all areas of the business.
So is there a, I mean, we assume that in most organisations, especially larger, you know, conservative, let's call it, organisations, there is going to be this resistance probably from a majority of people, IT included, that, you know, we don't want to change, everything's working fine as the way it is. This is something that has been or is being thrust upon us by, you know, the new CEO, or this is the, you know, project of the month, whatever you want to call it, a new bright, shiny object. How do you get that, you know, that sort of buy-in, or how do you get that commitment for people to basically say, look, you know, this is a change, this is coming, this is going to be better for the organisation and for yourself? How do we get those sort of people, you know, across the line and show them that, yes, in the long run, this is going to be of benefit to them, and their voice needs to be heard early on in the phase to make sure they do get stuff which is relevant to them?
It's really tricky, and I think it's hard at the moment because of the global crisis we're in. People are worn out. So there's, on the one hand, you know, again, Microsoft Teams, there was technology that had to come in because people needed to do their job. And so there was, you know, if you think about the way we, so it can be really tricky because of how worn out people can be. You know, we've all heard the term change fatigue. I think, though, it's really, really important right now in a global crisis where we've been through months and months of tough stuff. So I don't want to see a new shiny tool right now. I just want to do my job and have frustrations and challenges removed. So with that, you know, essentially, I always think of, you know, dangling that carrot or the carrot or those quick wins, because you've got to get them over that hump. So if we wanted to bring in a new shiny tool right now, and generally people thought, you know, no, not interested, I just, you know, I'm trying to cope. Well, what are the things that you're struggling with today? What are your challenges and pain points? Because then showing people, firstly, that you can remove some of those frustrations, hopefully gets them on board. And so that's key, I think, initially, is get them on board and provide some wins, you know, help them. And then maybe you'll shift them to then push through the discomfort of getting across the tool and learning it to the other side, where then they'll be happy that we introduced it. I was thinking this morning, I was talking to one of our staff and I was talking about, you know, the freeze and unfreeze sort of model. I think it's Lewin's model of changing behaviour and how, you know, people, you've got to unfreeze them and then get them across the new, and then when they're in the new state, freeze it again, because that's now the new way of doing things. We don't necessarily freeze into a state long term because of the way things are, but I think trying to unfreeze them is something I think about a lot, is how do we get people to literally shift? And so just trying to motivate them and give them some positivity to really push them through and get them curious, and then to get them to explore, I think is really important.
So how would you map the, you know, particular Microsoft 365 services to those quick wins, to those ability to show them the value quickly, as you've indicated? I mean, is it a case of showing them, you know, a better Outlook, a better email, or is it, you know, showing them things like Sway, things they haven't seen? In your experience, you know, how do you get those? Is there any secret or any recommendations for getting those quick wins, or does it vary with the person and the organisation?
I think there are some wins that are general or generic, that you know, there's going to be a foundation of Office 365 skills that every, for example, corporate worker needs, you know, making a call, storing a document, uploading. You know, there are things that we all have to do in our day-to-day job, and there are things that, you know, when we go into a lot of organisations, there are some quick wins that we think still things people aren't aware of. And it might be, how do you actually give access to a document and make it read-only? Or how do you, you know, when you go online into OneDrive and you go to the shared with me area, and there's all the documents that have been shared with you. People don't know about this. They go to their email and they keep all those emails when something's been shared, so they can click on that to go to it. So, you know, there are these nuggets of things that a lot of people go, oh, I never knew that. Apart from that, though, then there is a layer that is tailored. When we work through road mapping and a journey of the products for an organization, we bring in those areas of the business, we showcase products, and we're really logging and writing down the use cases and seeing the excitement. One council I worked with last year, they said the swim instructors and the exercise people, they don't need teams. We found out that they were using Facebook groups to talk about shift change and things. So when we said, oh, you could use a team channel and have the posting area, they went, we want teams. When can we get it? You know, they wanted teams for their school crossing guards to communicate, to say it's really hot, take your drink bottle. So it's about then talking to areas of the business and uncovering those things and then bringing that in as quickly as you can to really get them on board and get them excited with the tools.
So obviously there's a lot of tools in the product, and there are obviously tools that will speak to, you know, different groups, different people in different ways. The common tool, like you were talking about with Teams there, is that becoming sort of the key platform because it does encompass so many things and it does allow at its core, you know, communications. Is that sort of the key thing that you would introduce to people to get them excited, to get them on board?
It is, and it's interesting. I wonder, looking at that in, you know, glass ball or what have you of 2020, if it would have been that, you know, without the crisis, because come January, February, I remember doing sort of pre-sales consulting and companies that just were like, we're just not ready. We don't want to go to that app yet. And 6 weeks later, calling us and saying, okay, help us, help our people work from home. So 2020 has certainly felt like the year of Microsoft Teams. So there, yes, there are a lot of organisations that want it, and it can become a real hub. You know, once they roll it out, people are in that hub. They can call, they can meet, they can communicate, and they can track actions, share documents and notes. So there's a, it's just where it all comes together. You know, we still have projects where people aren't in Teams at all, and we're doing file migrations and building SharePoint sites and things. But certainly 2020, I would say, is the year of Microsoft Teams, and it's been the full sort of taste the whole way through. Yeah.
All right. So do you, is the approach that you recommend, or the approach that you find works best, is a, you know, a slow and steady introduction of the services? So do you start with the basics that everybody's familiar with, let's say email and maybe basic files, and then move to Teams and other options? Or, you know, is it a big bang approach? Or, you know, again, what do you see as the way to obviously, you know, make sure that change happens, but happens in a way that it doesn't overload people with, you know, this huge amount of functionality that we're now seeing in Microsoft 365?
I think, you know, in a perfect world, we definitely, you know, have a journey, and it might be 12 months or even 18 months. Like, you can ideally take your time. And as you say, you know, if I haven't come across an organization that doesn't use Outlook for a long time, but, you know, if they said we're Google, firstly, yeah, move them into Outlook and Windows 10. Have that sort of think about what is the core day-to-day stuff. Look at file storage and don't rush it, because there really needs to be thought around SharePoint sites, Teams, OneDrive. Where are we going to tell people that we store, you know, their own work versus formal processes and published documents? Do they use Trim? You know, are there other things that all interact and are part of their platform as an organization? So having workshopping the bigger picture and document storage and across the apps, and then building a roadmap and thinking about where is their urgency versus what can wait. You can have small POCs. So I think you said Sway before. You know, Sway, you can have a marketing area or an EA who does a newsletter, or pockets where it's just a couple of people or a small group that, you know, you have do Sway, and that could be quite quick versus waiting and having a real plan for stepping broadly across the organization into something like Microsoft Teams. One of the reasons why I advocate taking it slow is think about Microsoft Teams. When you do tabs and have other apps, you've got OneNote, Planner, you can use Forms, you know, you can bring in sites and libraries and all sorts of things. So if you actually just turn it on and get everyone in and say, create your teams and go, there's loads of bad habits that they're taking into that environment because they weren't really across all those apps well in the first place. So having a longer term journey and taking your time and stepping people in, having clear learning journey and outcomes as they go along with an approach, I think is really important.
So again, a good question on the team side of it. One of the things that I've seen is that we're bringing a lot of change for you know, individuals here. And most people, again, do seem to get overloaded rather quickly once we integrate and change things dramatically. Is Teams too much too quickly? Like, you've got, you know, files, you've got chat, you've got, you know, all these other options and the wiki out of the box. In your experience, is that something that people do take to and they can manage it? Or, again, is it something that you say, right, we're just going to use it for meetings first or files first? What's your experience with, you know, a product which really has lots of interconnected services and is a dashboard over a lot of things? Is that too much for people to start out with?
Yeah. I think I said before, in a perfect world, so what's the opposite to that? So in a rushed, messy approach.
Is the opposite.
Yeah, what everyone's been doing this year that we'll clean up afterwards.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So when it goes too fast and too soon and too messy, particularly with lack of control, people, you know, it's like individuals feel overwhelmed. Where do I put it? What's this team and what's this group chat and what are all these things that everyone's doing? You know, people get left behind really quickly and they just don't know, and then they lose confidence and get resistant or just defeated. So we've done it a few different ways. Sometimes we advocate chat and calling only, and we literally turn off the icon for Teams in the Teams application. That works really well. When we do a lot of rollouts, we have modules. So it's Microsoft Teams 101, chat and calling, meetings close behind. And we do a lot of work on driving effective meetings and make sure people really get value out of even bringing in, if they want, whiteboard, you know, or notes, or how they work together with meetings and shared notebooks. So how do we work together as individuals and meet and communicate is enough a lot of the time. Then the team workspace, because the team workspace is where it goes off in different directions for different departments, depending on what apps work for them. So yes, turning it on, having no governance or control is a headache and hurts people. That sounds terrible, but it just does. It causes anxiety, it causes confusion. I worked with a company last year that had 9,000 staff, 9,000 teams. It just, they went, let's enable it and give people what they want rapidly. And people, if let's say you and I wanted to have a chat about a customer issue, those two people would create a team instead of a chat. So there was such a lack of awareness on what the tools should be used for, and it became a massive mess, and there was a massive cleanup we were pulled in to do, and re-education. So take your time, because it can be too much and it can be overwhelming.
So what, in your experience, is a sign that it is becoming too much? I mean, you know, from a personal point of view, obviously when we start out, hopefully everybody's on board, we're all, you know, in the conga line and we're all clean on getting the technology. And then as it begins to roll out, there are challenges and, you know, potentially overload can step in there. What, in your experience, what's the warning signs that it's too much? Are we going too quickly? We need to back off a bit.
The number of team, definitely, but also even just through conversation, asking what goes where. You know, over the last couple of years, I feel like I've been in organisations where you've actually heard someone in the open plan, back when we were in the offices, say, I don't know where you put it. I don't know where I saved it, what library. So when you actually have a couple of discussions and you realise they don't actually, people don't know, there isn't a clear kind of message of which goes where and which tool when, and that's a sign when definitely, well, that's actually almost a, it's too late sign, to be honest. So when you're engaged with an organization, they say, we've got it out there, people are using it, but if you further that conversation, you start to uncover, okay, so what's the message around where to store files, or give us some examples of how people are using it and how many teams they're using, or let us look under the hood and look at the data, or sit with some of you and have a look at your team structure and the way you're working. You'll find that they've got way too many teams. They'll say, oh, I don't know which one I'm supposed to be doing stuff in, and I don't know when stuff should be in SharePoint or other libraries versus in the team area. So it's that general, once you see confusion and loads of activity, it's sort of gone off in an array and, you know, fallen off the rails a bit, and people are already probably feeling that fatigue.
And how does all this fit in with the challenges around, existing business culture and processes. So obviously, you know, a lot of businesses are very conservative in their approach, especially the larger businesses, and they're in a, you know, a comfort approach to the way that they do things. And this is going to definitely require some change, some different, you know, slight change in the way they do things because there's not a drive letter or they're going in a different approach. How do you find that, you know, that balance between, you know, this is the way we've always done it, why do we need to change, versus this is the new tool and to get the most out of it, you do need to change to take advantage of it. What's the, you know, experience, or how would you deal with those sort of, I would think, are fairly common friction points in any sort of implementation?
It is, and it's interesting, isn't it? Because we're talking a lot about Microsoft Teams. 6 months ago, I don't think I was as much. It was more balanced across the tools. And yes, it's, you know, to do with the year we've had. But it's not like things were the same and settled before now, before this tool. You know, we've all been in those organizations where it's, as you've said, I think earlier in this conversation, it's a new shiny thing, or it's the new thing. So from a culture perspective, it's really tricky because a lot of people aren't interested. Hey, we've got SharePoint libraries and I can use Skype or Zoom or WebEx or whatever to call people. So you do come up with a lot of cultural challenges. One of the big ones will be IT versus the business. So our challenges might be either A, getting IT to see why we need the business involved, because they just think it's a tool they're giving everyone, or the business seeing that they need to play a role. And that's a conversation I had, you know, 2 hours ago this morning was, hey, we've got this customer. Everyone in the business says, it's not our problem, IT, you'll just get it all sorted. So there's the sort of all the cultural challenges around the relationships in that business, how they work together, and helping get over the hump of working together on a new tool. Also, I think one of the things you sort of touched on as well was processes. So you've got culture, but then I think if you were to drive really deep longer-term value of Office 365 in an organization, those are the places where they have a digital workplace type consultant or really great knowledge of Office 365 with permanent staff, or a long-term type, maybe managed service or some sort of arrangement where they've got long-term thinking and they're getting monthly goals and over the year really working on that, because that's where you get process innovation. When it's a go live and it's a tool comes in, train the people, yep, you can save documents this way, you can do ABC, and then that's it. That's where you can get a bit of fizzle and you stop the value from happening, because no one really looks at the processes and looks to innovate. They just show you how to do calls, meetings, and store some things online. So there's a number of things that you have to overcome to move beyond resistance and cultural challenges, but also really going deep into process to use the tools instead of just turning on and seeing it as another launch.
So what about, we've done everything right, you've begun the change management process appropriately, you've got the interest, you've got people, you know, moving together in the right direction and going through this change process. Now, I would think that the situation, the journey typically is like the typical diffusion of innovation style curve, where, again, there's this gee whiz, everybody's hyped up, and then, oh, this is a bit harder than we thought, and, oh, no, this is really, and then they go down that curve the other side where all of a sudden it may not be or be more challenging than they thought. How do you keep the energy up? How do you, what strategies could you recommend that, again, help people get through that hump day time period in this transition?
Yeah, it's tricky. It's funny. I was thinking about that yesterday, the learning dip and the learning, that kind of chasm, or, you know, that sort of deflation that people fall into. It's like, oh, okay, I'll give it a go. And then, oh, too hard. No, don't want to. Can we go back to the old way? That way that you have to, as I say, drag people, help people climb up, that feeling of climbing up out of that and getting them to really embed learning and really stick with the new and see it and try it and get over that hump. It's hard. And I don't think a lot of change programs with Office 365 give people the support they need to really keep going. I think that they train people walk away, but I don't think they have the knowledge and the context to go back to their desk and apply it to their job. And I think that's one of the real sort of dangers and disappointments is we rolled it out, but then it got too hard and So if you think about the percentage of a tool, I like to really think about with an organization, you know, you've got this many licenses, this is what you're paying. Look at all the apps you actually have for your people. Look at the metrics. It can be really interesting to think about where did you actually get to through this, you know, because maybe it's a really low percentage of actual sort of value or features being utilized because people stopped caring because they got to that hump and they went, nah, I can't be bothered. I hate Office 365. Teams annoys me. One of the positives this year has been that expression that I've seen thrown around a lot, adoption by crisis. Organizations achieved much more in a rapid time because people needed it and we hadn't seen that before. And so that was interesting. And so that's the one thing this year that's gotten people through the hump is I have to work from home. I have to make calls and I'll just do it. There's not many projects where I think you would have seen that in the past where combined everyone in an organization just did stuff because it had to be done. It's the challenge of pushing people and guiding them and helping them. And I think you have to work out learning styles and knowledge and needs and just keep supporting to pull them through so you don't leave them behind and end up with resentment and fatigue.
Yeah, it's just good old Parkinson's law, isn't it, where the task will automatically expand to the length of the time allowed for it. So we shorten that, and it's amazing what you can get done. But what about when we get we've got all this again and we're going well here. What about a situation where, you know, in the midst of this, a new service pops into the mix here, like lists? So let's take that as an example, which has happened recently. Everybody's happily, you know, moving along in this direction. Then all of a sudden, you know, there's this new service that pops out that appears on my, start screen. I start hearing things from Microsoft and it seems very exciting and it will solve, the exact problem that I have at the moment. How do you deal with that? Because we're in a situation with Microsoft 365 where, you know, there are new products, new enhancements, changes, you know, every day. Again, that is generally going to count against you because people expect, if I get in now, it will be the same to the point that I finish. And that's probably not going to be the case, is it, really, over time? So, you know, how do you approach the fact that, you know, probably when I go in today, it's going to have something different or something new about it, you know, and I'm still trying to work out, you know, the basics?
All I think about when you talk about that is empathy. You know, I'm really resistant to change as my personality, and sometimes people that I work with closely have a giggle about that, because you know it's frustrating and sometimes you've just got to empathize with people and work out how to help people become adaptable, because this is life, isn't it? And Office 365, that's the thing, it's not set and forget. And again, I think I touched on earlier that model of unfreeze and then freeze again. We'll just throw that out the window because it's not going to be the case. And Outlook's a really great example of something that we had for years. And isn't it nice to know how to use it and know how to use it effectively and you know, set yourself up to know how you can start your day and it will never change. But, it's hard for organizations, I think, especially when you think about the value of a project, to deliver it, to have it go live, to be in Office 365, and there's this real kind of anxiety or uncertainty around the platform sometimes and when's it going to change next. Ideally an organization needs to be across, kind of have a center of excellence approach and a working group or whatever they can pull together and be across the roadmap and look at what's coming in the next quarter or next month and really be across, you know, have a bit of an agile cycle and key stakeholders like the change manager, the L&D person, the IT person, and think about these are the things that are coming, do a quick impact assessment and then feed out to areas of the business who maybe need to use the tool or are going to be impacted, update the learning guides, things like that. So there is a bit of a feedback loop and a cycle you can have. But again, that's perfect world because I don't think many organizations are there yet. So right now, I think we just have to go with it, unfortunately, and work and gradually work out what's this new world and how do we equip ourselves to absorb enhancements and ongoing change in a way that helps our people. I personally try to work with turning things off and preparing for them. And I get very frustrated when something just is in your environment suddenly. Even when we train, I turned on my computer yesterday and was running a training session for an organization, and shared screen and realized that, you know, a feature was different and wasn't there that last time I did a session with them it was. So some of it, unfortunately, it feels like we have to just suck it up and accept that this is the world we're in. But understandably, with some organizations, the culture isn't there. Their people will freak out and be quite, you know, unhappy if they don't have control and know what's coming and really, you know, support their people through it.
It is interesting because many of those people who would freak out about a new service appearing, you know, on their start screen are the same people that have 5,000 apps on their mobile device and 50 screens. Yeah. Oh, a new app, quick, add it, install it, and they're, you know, auto-updating. So, again, it is interesting. I think it's also in the context of their control. I think, obviously, if they're selecting to put the apps on, they feel more in control. But if they're basically appearing without the knowledge and, you know, what does this do and how do I actually use it, I think that's the scary thing for a lot of people. It's just that, you know, lack of control in their environment, and they don't always see that as a, you know, a good, as something I would explore. And perhaps that may change over time as we get, you know, people who are used to the, you know, the web world and those sort of apps and accept that and are looking for that change. Perhaps maybe that's part of it as well.
Yeah. I had a workshop yesterday on MFA with an organization, and they said, oh, we'll just tell people that it's like when you get a code for your online banking. Easy. And it's funny, I said to them, it's really interesting because the first project where I had to explain MFA, I feel like online banking codes weren't as common. So, yeah, on the one hand, it's interesting. So this world we live in with our banking and our Netflix and all the things we use is actually helping with Office 365. But years ago, you know, I remember trying to explain OneDrive cloud libraries in, you know, the years before we had maybe our personal Dropbox and camera photo libraries. So that personal life stuff does really, really help. I catch myself out when I go to turn on my, you know, TV or whatever, you know, things I'm using on my smartphone and something's different and I go, oh, where is it? And then I go, look at me, I'm working it out. Maybe I shouldn't whinge next time PowerPoint changes or OneDrive. But it's interesting. I think when we take it into the workplace, there's extra stress and anxiety because it's our job and we've got pressures. So I almost feel like there's a lot to do with the stress of work and things where when something changes, it's like they're pulling the rug out from under us, and it's harder to deal with as opposed to sitting on the couch and re-navigating Netflix today, as an example.
Yeah, I think because, again, you've got typically a boss or you've got other people depending on you, whereas the consumer side is like, well, you know, if I can't work out the extra Netflix thing, it's not a problem. I'll work it out next time. So you're right. It probably is that added, you know, work pressures on top of it. So now as we get towards the end of, you know, this process, hopefully it's all going well, what sort of, you know, again, have you got any insight into, you know, what are good metrics? What can we look to say, yes, this is working from a, you know, an analytical side? We can talk to people and it seems all well and good, but how can we look at the numbers, the data to back up and say, yes, this is confirmation that people are adopting these, they're actually using them, they're using what they are intended for? Have you got any guidance or any suggestions or experience on, you know, how to use the metrics in a way that can, you know, reinforce that you are going in the right direction?
Yeah, I think definitely look at the metrics and, I mean, obviously look at an increase. You know, look at when, if you went live with a service, have a look if there's a steady increase or peaks. There was some Microsoft research a while ago that showed on average 4 weeks after an organization goes live with Teams, it fizzles because they all try chatting the new thing and then they all go back to the old way. That was from a while ago, so it may be different now. But I think definitely look at the applications and the activity in the metrics and see if you're having a steady rise. So is actually a steady increase in gradual learning and, you know, more files being uploaded and things like that. Also within particularly Microsoft Teams, have a look at different features. I've worked with organizations where there's thousands or millions of chat messages, but not many meetings booked through Teams because people just didn't really get it. So it's important to dig a bit deeper and have actually look at the story the metrics are telling. Don't go, oh yeah, 83% usage or 50% usage, done. Actually think, what do the metrics mean? A document uploads in SharePoint increasing because of some other IT background thing that's just pushing files there, or is it because people are using libraries and Teams and channels? So also have a look at the productivity score as an organization. Try to work out, have to think about where the instruction will be to have a look at that, but the productivity score information you can get. And also the Power BI dashboard information from in your tenant, as opposed to just the higher level metrics. And so these are the things that you need to sort of be aware of and really know what story it's telling you. I think that's essentially it, is just look between the lines and really see what it means and know what it's talking about, as opposed to just seeing some numbers and thinking it's all good.
Yeah, you've got to be careful of the situation where the rise in storage of people putting stuff in OneDrive doesn't equate to them moving their DVD collection into yes. the 1 terabyte of storage. So, again, like you said, you do need to dig a little bit deeper just to get the consolidation that this is actually going in the right direction. People are using it in the way that you're trying to encourage. So as we round off here, what are some, across the whole range here that we've talked about, the implementation, the best practices, you know, in your experience in the real world of today, right here, right now, are there any, you know, again, you know, hacks, or are there any, you know, things to particularly pay attention to, or any, you know, secret sauce out there that people, okay, well, make sure that, you know, you check this or do this or watch out for this based on the experience you've had with all the organizations you've worked with?
Work out what things are out there that you can really leverage off to save budget and time, like Microsoft Learning Pathways. There's a whole lot of learning content in there that stays up to date. So don't build content that's really tailored, you know, and really customized for your organization. You know, think about where you're going to put the budget in the right ways. And just think about the people. I think too many organizations go, we're going to use all these apps and it's going to be amazing. But put your budget and effort where you're really going to get long-term success, and that is with the journey, the campaign and the story, and the, you know, the benchmark, the whole picture for your people, and how you're going to pull them through that change dip or that learning dip to get things to stick long-term. And that's where I think once they're all on the journey and you get that change, then you will move towards a more positive and better way of doing things and success.
All right, excellent. So, yeah, I would suggest you lock up your IT people. But again, that's that tends to be frowned upon, unfortunately. But I think the main thing to take away is, from my point of view, is it's a people process. It's not pure technology, as you've mentioned throughout this. So I think that's where the project, in my experience, have failed, because they've just looked at it purely in technical terms and they've overlooked the people are actually the ones that are using the tools. They're the ones that are doing the work. They're the ones that you need to support with these, rather than the technology being the primacy for the reason of doing this. So, all right. So, again, thank you very much for your time. Do you have any contact details where people can obviously reach out to you to get more information or go deeper on any of this, or where you do share this information with other people publicly?
Yeah, definitely. My Twitter is at Megan Strandt. I have a website, meganstrandt.com. I do a lot of writing on there with lots of all these different topics. And I'm definitely on LinkedIn, Megan Strandt. So, yeah, reach out to me, definitely.
And I'll make sure that those links are in the show notes for our listeners. And again, I'll take this opportunity to thank Megan for her time. Obviously, the information, there's obviously something you could go quite deep into if you do want to get that success. And I certainly encourage people to look at it in that respect as well, rather than just a pure, and even, you know, no matter how big or small the project is, because there are people involved in all of these processes. So again, Megan, thank you very much for coming on and sharing that information with us.
Thanks so much, Robert. Really, really interesting discussion. Thanks for having me.
All right, thank you very much. And again, thank you to everybody for listening to this episode of the Need to Know podcast.
You have been listening to the Need to Know podcast from CIA Ops. For training on using technologies like SharePoint Online or Microsoft 365, visit www.ciaopsacademy.com. By purchasing from the selections available, you'll be directly supporting this podcast. To provide feedback on this episode, visit www.ciaops.com/contact.